Do you ever want to hear how the famous found fame? How the poor man became a millionaire? How risking comfort gave someone more freedom? Honestly, some days, do you ever just need someone to tell you that everything is going to turn out okay? You're listening to the Y'all Podcast, where everyone has a seat at the table. I'm your host, Laura Jean Bell. I'm on a mission to restore hope to your future. Join me as I share stories about life and faith with a little Southern twang. I will share stories of the past and the ones that are still being written to help you laugh at the days to come. Meet with me around the table, telling tales about the lives of others, of business, risk, heartache, joy, failure, and success. Let go of the fear that hopelessness is your destiny and fill up on the encouragement that mercies are new each day. Because the best thing about a story is that there is a beginning and an end. Today on the show, we have Sean Dietrich. Sean is an author, columnist, husband, and dear friend of mine. He is the author of many books and a well-sought-out Southern storyteller. This summer, I had the incredible honor and privilege of endorsing his latest book, You Are My Sunshine, which is available for purchase now. Sean is a storytelling delight. His words and his music will incline you to burst into tears and laugh out loud all in one moment. You can find Sean on Instagram at Sean of the South, or you can go to his website, seanofthesouth.com, for daily Southern stories to drop into your inbox. Join us today as we share stories that center us back to hope in another good day to come. All right, y'all. Thank you for coming back to another episode of the Y'all Podcast. Today, I have Sean Dietrich, the one and only Sean Dietrich, on the show today. And I'm so excited for y'all to be able to hear from him and hear what he's up to, what is new in his life. Since our last interview in 2020. So Sean, if you would just give us a little introduction of yourself, tell everyone who doesn't know who you are and what you do, and go.
Well, my name is Sean Dietrich, and for about 10 years, I've been writing a daily blog slash whatever you want to call it, And it's been coming out for, about a decade. And what people call me is Sean of the South, because that was a name that me and my friend came up with, because it was either that or something else like Sean with the Wind. Something ridiculous. And anyway, I've been doing that for a while now, and that's kind of how people know me. Okay. And, I don't know. I write books. I write blogs. I talk to
people. A columnist, a novelist, not a communist. I laughed my head off at your show indicator when you said that woman introduced you as a communist. I lost my mind. That was hysterical.
Yeah, it's only missing a few letters and you'd be, that word naturally forms itself.
Absolutely. I first heard you in, I think it was in 2014 or 15, when those years kind of run together. It was an odd time in my life. And my aunt, both of my aunts that live in Montgomery, were like, we've got this guy coming to the chapel on the hill at the Waters, and he is going to come and he's going to tell stories. This was out in Pike Road, Alabama.
Yeah.
And they were like, you would love him and you have to come. Like, we're going to make you come. And I was like, oh, I've never like heard of this guy before. And they were like, well, we read his blog and you just have to come hear him for yourself. And so my parents took me, they bought me Chick-fil-A and we all came out to your show. And I was hooked from that day on.
Really?
I just thought, this guy is awesome. And I think Jamie was sitting in the back.
I remember that chapel at the Waters. That was
Chapel at the Waters. When was that? Do you remember what year?
No, you think you're right. It must have been 14 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, Jamie was in the back. I think it was right after you had self-published, like you just put together all your blogs in a mm-hmm. book.
Yeah.
And you had those sitting out, and it was such a good show. It was so captivating. And some of the stories that you shared, were very emotional. Like it was like 1 second I felt like I was about to sob. And then the next second I was laughing out loud, and I was like, what? This guy is incredible. Just at everything that he talks about, how he so authentically shares. And I think that that's what really drew me into your book, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? I know that you released this like huge, big deal book, and then bam, the pandemic hit and like shut down your tour and all of those things. But I kind of want to talk a little bit about that book sure. because that story is so, I mean, I've lent the book out. I've bought more copies and given it away because it's so encouraging. And it's so inspiring. And this podcast is all about our stories. And so talk to us a little bit about Will the Circle Be Unbroken? This book that you, your first, I guess, was it your first really big book? You had a publishing company, all of that.
It was my second big book. Before okay. that, I had a novel come out, which, you know, different, fiction as opposed to nonfiction, but
yes,
I'd still gone through that process. And so,
yeah.
And then as far as like number of books though, it was really like my, sixth book. So it was, yeah. Which was good for me because yeah. to tell a story that was, like that, I was really glad that I had a lot of practice going into it, you know, because it allowed me to be kind of I could be a little irreverent at times, which was good. I wanted the story to have more of a humorous feel, not just be heavy and dark, you know, because of some of the things I went through as a young yeah. man. So it was really good to have that practice going into it. But yeah, we released yeah. that book, and yeah, as soon as the book came out, boom, pandemic. And that was, I felt almost that it was meant, I mean, of course it was meant to be because it happened that way, but mm-hmm. I felt like it was a good thing in the end when you think about it, because, you know, a story like the one I told in Will the Circle mm-hmm. was meant to be encouraging, and it was meant to be for people who had gone through trauma
yeah.
of some kind. And that's not a story you want to sell. You know, you don't want to go out there and promote that. You don't want to go... what's the word? You're not trying to convince anyone to buy this book. That's mm-hmm. kind of silly. This is the kind of book that should just find its way into somebody's hands.
Yeah.
Either through providence or, you know, accident. And it should be kind of whoever needs it, maybe will find it. And that's how I think that book needs to be passed along. So, looking back, I'm grateful that it happened the way it did, because we were doing this tour and, you know, getting on talk shows and radio shows and TV shows and stuff, talking about the book. And
yeah.
when it's your own life, it feels kind of weird talking about yeah. your life as in product form. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was such a moving story. And I know it's your own life, and there are so many pieces of that is like the traumatizing parts of your life. And then just these like really sweet, incredible turning points in your life. And I think that that's what was so striking about it is as I was reading, like I was reading this one part of the book, and it was the section where you were up late and you were watching TV, and the woman on the TV screen, like you called her or she called you. And basically you have this transaction with this person who's like helping you through fear, just yeah. like this tremendous amount of fear in your life, which it doesn't matter how traumatized you've been. Like people know that type of fear. Like when it's so heavy and deep and you're so afraid and like something happens that just gives you a moment of relief. I was reading that part and I started reading it to my dad, and me and my dad are like bawling, like wailing, because it was such a connecting point. I think that's what you do so well with the way that you tell stories, is that you allow people to remember a feeling or remember a moment or remember a song and where they were or whatever that is. And so what this book did is it allowed us to feel the weight of what you experienced, but also that there is actually hope beyond like all of that. So I want to hear a little bit about just that book, just the process of putting that book together, and maybe what's your favorite part of it? What was the gift that came from putting all of that on paper?
Well, like I said, I had kind of had a lot of practice because I'd been doing my columns for years at that point. And I had also written other books. So I had told a lot of stories that were in the book in serial form already. And that gave me a neat perspective because I was able to figure out which ones I felt portrayed what I was trying to say the most. Yeah. And I was able to leave other things out, you know, that probably just would have slowed the whole process down. So I felt like I had a clear direction where I was going, which is rare. You know, normally when you write, you just don't know where you're going. But so writing it was incredibly fun, actually. Mm-hmm. which was the advantage of having the practice of talking about some pretty emotional things. Mm-hmm. And getting the infection in the wound purged so that you could actually really talk about some things without getting so personally invested that it bothered you or ruined you or wrecked you for the rest of the day. I actually enjoyed the entire process of writing the book. There was never a moment where I was writing and felt just totally catatonic or affected to where I couldn't go on, which is, a lot of people when they write memoirs and if they maybe haven't written before, it's pretty impacting and they're not quite ready for what it can do to you. It can really well up some memories and stuff. So,
sure.
So anyway, that I was surprised by that. I didn't expect that I would be that way, but it was nice because I was able to go through some really bad moments in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And see them from a completely different perspective and enjoy the goodness in them.
Yeah.
And kind of see the badness for what it was, but not hold it too close. Just kind of let it be what it was. And
Well, so I've let that book fall into a lot of people's hands.
Yeah. So. I hope my only hope when I wrote it was that, that it helps somebody. And if it's helped one person, then it was worth the process of writing it. And plus maybe my second goal was to find to write about something that's not humorous and not funny and not happy and not uplifting, but make it, to put it in a lens, that is not dreadful to read, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the story comes out, but I wanted it, I wanted it to feel good. I wanted it to feel like a good book. So, mm-hmm.
Well, it was, and I think the whole purpose of this podcast, and it was why I kind of have harped a little bit on this book to start out with, is it's learning that the little subtitle under your book is like learning something that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. That's right.
Say it for me. Say it.
I think it was a memoir of learning to believe you're going to be okay.
That's it. Learning to believe that you're going to be okay. And so much of this podcast is finding hope without fear of the future. And I think when we can hear a story like yours, that started out with a lot of hardship and like very vivid memories of sitting places as a kid and recognizing just the moments around you and not having enough of a matured brain to be able to like rationalize everything. There's so much of our lives that when we look back, we can remember like somebody's shoes, right? But like the emotion that you felt, like you can't describe it till you're an adult. how that when we are in those moments, we oftentimes are so scared of what comes next because that moment was so scary and so hard. And learning to just laugh without fear of the future. And like Proverbs 31 talks about the woman of noble character, or the wife of noble character, how she laughs at the days to come. And I feel like the Lord really put that on my heart to hear people like you say, hey, I've been through it. And like, everything is okay. And you know, I got okay. And like, things get better. They can get better. And the amount of time it took you to get through school and like all the work you put in, all of that. I mean, that is just, it was so uplifting to read. Moving on do what?
Thank you, by the way. My goodness.
You're welcome. Thank you for writing the book. It was so good. So encouraging. I've sent it off to so many people and I've read it more than one time because it was just so encouraging to me. But to move on to your most recent book, You Are My Sunshine, I want to dive into this story just a little bit. I need some dirty details of this trip and all the things that came with it. Talk to everyone who's listening. Tell them just a little bit about this book, the story that goes with it, and we'll kind of dive in from there.
Well, my wife and I took a 350-mile bike trip starting from Pittsburgh, and it went all the way to Virginia. And we rode across those four states during the pandemic, and it was quite an experience. And when I was done, I realized that I had to write a book about this because I'd probably never do anything like this again. Of course, now that after we've done that experience, now I am interested in things like that, which is ridiculous, but also, but you know, it does change you. So anyway, that was the book. That was the book premise. And I actually kind of, you know, you make a mistake when you decide to write about something because you're going to be spending the next 8 months or a year with that topic. So I feel like I've read that trail 1,000 times now.
Yeah. And I know reading this book, I think what was the most humorous part of it is y'all's preparation for this trip and your description of what your life looked like at the start of this pandemic. And what, I mean, how many people can relate to wearing the same pajama pants every single day and like only walking to their mailbox and just like sitting in their house, like what has happened, right? Everyone kind of had this like, right? Like, what are we going to do? And how is this, like, where are we going to go from here? And I love how Jamie, after meeting her, and spending some time with her at your show in Decatur, I was like, I can see every piece of her in what you wrote. I can see every piece of her, just her spunk and her personality. She's like a little spitfire. She's amazing. And so talk to me a little bit about y'all's preparation for this trip and kind of where you were before. So you said before you weren't really interested in these things.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, our preparation was, you know, kind of non-existent. I mean, we shouldn't have gone on this trip. We should have trained and done stuff like that. But it was kind of just dive off the diving board. That's how we prepared. And we bought stuff. You know, she read reviews on Amazon, and that was basically what we lived on. We lived on reviews. So so we went and we, you know, after this very brief period of gathering our stuff to live like homeless people, we drove up to Pennsylvania and we did the trail. And it was a rough time to be alive I hate to dramatize the pandemic. You know, I know people went through much worse during the depression and everything, but this was rough. You know,
it was a different type of thing. The depression was horrible.
Yeah.
But this was different.
This was like collective. We were all like, you know, people in Italy and people in California and people in Florida and people in Canada, everybody in the world was doing this at the same time. They were isolating themselves, and it just felt like mental illness was everywhere. You know, everybody was going crazy and depression and all that. So it was really a weird time to be doing this, because my career kind of felt like it was falling apart, just like everybody's. And I thought, you know, Lord, what's going to happen to us? And and here we are just gallivanting across four states on bicycles, you know. But it did inspire me when we were done. It really did. I find the more things you do that you're kind of apprehensive to do or even afraid to do, the more of those you do, the less that fear kind of has a hold of you. And so, and it can be little things, it can be big things, but those, you know, getting, at least for me personally, freeing up from the fears that kind of hold you back. It's not an all at once thing. It's a little by little thing. You conquer one little fear and you move on to the next little fear and you move on to the next little fear. And then one day, you know, you've gotten somewhere. But this was one of those for me. I really didn't want to do this. But after we did it, I'd do it again. You know, I wouldn't love to do it again, but I would do it again. And that's a perfect example. So anyway, now that we're back and back into normal life, Jamie and I, we hike all the time now, which is really bizarre. We never did that before. Yeah. And we're a lot more active than we used to be. So it really was a turning point.
Yeah, for sure. And I love how in the book, you kind of took this story from kind of a scary moment, and how like Jamie had gone through something and and she saw this one thing, and then you're like, okay, it's over, all is well. And then
she cashed in.
Turns around, it's like, hey, we're going to go do this. And I don't really care what you say. I'm going to buy all the things, and we're going to camp out in our living room and practice. And, we're going to go do this trail. And I know, like, I think I kind of related to some of the moments where you were like in the pouring rain and like setting up your tent, you had lost Jamie and just like all of these things. Those moments, there are people who have literally, I hiked the Appalachian Trail. I didn't do the full trail, but I hiked it with my youth group in high school. And I remember it snowed the first night. It snowed and we were like 8 inches of snow, and our guide couldn't make a fire, like just weird stuff that kind of went down. It marks you. And like, you're like, I'm never doing this again. The whole time you're like, I hate this. And then when you get to the other side, you're like, we should do that again. That was really fun.
Right. Exactly.
It kind of does a weird thing to you. But what I loved about this book is just how, like, who you met along the way and how you interacted with different people, but what it also did for you and Jamie, your time without technology.
Oh yeah.
I loved what you had to say about that. Can you kind of dive into that just a little bit about kind of what that did for your mind and your soul?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of wakes you up. It kind of, we lost our phones, so we didn't have self-service or anything. And it kind of, I mean, the really interesting thing about that is that at least my generation, I grew up without that. I didn't have a cell phone until I was like, I think I was 30 or maybe a little younger than that. But, we didn't have internet. I mean, when my wife and I got married, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, none of that was, I mean, it was there. It was certainly out, but it just wasn't nearly as mainstream as it is now. And I can't even fathom that being the case anymore. I can't even fathom the internet not being mainstream and cell phones not being everybody has them. I mean, Jamie didn't send a text until we'd been married forever, and you know, she'd gotten a cell phone that was textable, and I remember that was a big deal. So it's not that long ago that we didn't have this immersive technology. It's not that far away, and yet it has just totally dominated my life, at least and my wife's. And so when we didn't have those on the trail, all of a sudden it was a cold slap in the face. I mean, to realize how how really addicted we were, even out there on a trail. You know, you wouldn't think that you would care about technology and stuff on the trail, but you do, obviously, because it's part of who you are. And so without that, it was a startling experience. And it kind of woke me up to some of the things that that I would like to change about myself. I hadn't changed them yet, but I would love to.
It's very real.
It's kind of sad. It kind of replaces socialization. I've definitely realized that. Without it, you know, without the cell phone, I felt so lonely, which was so weird to feel lonely without a device. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Then when we get them back, you know, they're always beside me. So
yeah,
I'm just as bad as I ever was.
No, I totally understand that. And how it's your connection to the outside world. It's your connection to like your mom or your friend or whoever. Like that's how you get to them. And it's interesting how for so long, I mean, I remember when my parents got cell phones, like, and I remember my life, my parents' lives without them. My dad had a beeper, you know, I remember like all, hold on, let me beep your dad. And then the phone would ring like 20 minutes later because he found a pay phone to like call her.
Exactly.
So, you know, life has transformed and I'm 31. So, I mean, we obviously, there's a lot that has transpired over time. And I saw something the other day that said, people were more free when phones still had cords or when phones were not or something like that.
Right.
It's very true. It's very telling of like where we are, but there's so many gifts that come with the connection that we have. We wouldn't be able to be talking right now.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to say it's a terrible thing. I just, I guess a part of me does miss that whole, the way, you know, life kind of was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Same. And it makes me realize how my grandparents could sit by each other and hold hands and not talk, but do anything.
Yeah. Right.
They're just staring, staring. Like
that's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Look at the birds, look at the sky. You know, my dad always tells a story about my grandmother getting emotional watching a mama chicken find her baby chicks, like how she was all frantic and then she found the chicks and calmed down and my grandmother started crying and like getting on to these baby chickens.
Grandmother
was like, are you okay? Like, do you need to cool off a minute? You know, but like she noticed those things. There's so much that I think we can miss because can't stand not having something to do or to look at.
Definitely. And whatever. When you don't have one, all of a sudden you notice everybody else who does, and then it really scares you because it is so pervasive that you can't go anywhere without finding that someone is using their phone. Maybe everybody's using their phone, and you really, it's a little scary. You know, you look around, you're like, wow, that's how I look. We're just kind of looking down.
Yeah. We're just looking at the abyss and like of just a million people's lives, which makes us feel connected even when we don't know people, which
it's totally false. Yeah.
Yes. It's very strange. I've had a realization recently with my daughter who is almost 4. And if she like hears a video, like if I'm looking at a video, she's like, who is that? And if my answer is like, I don't know, she has said to me before, then why are you watching that? Like, if you don't know them, why are you watching that? Which is like the most bizarre thing. But it's like, oh, that's true. Like I'm spending my time looking at these people that I don't know. There's a gift to that. But like when a 4-year-old is like, that's weird, you know, like you're like, oh, it is kind of weird. It is a little bit strange. Well, I want to dive a little bit more into the book just a smidge. I think that my favorite thing is that on the cover, when I first got the book, Jamie sent me the PDF. I got to read it early. So it was this little gift to me to get. When she sent that email, I didn't check my email for like a week. I had shingles. Oh. And I was so sick and so stressed out. I got shingles because I was stressed.
Yeah.
And I've been to lots of doctors and been finding a great route to healing. But when I got her email, I thought I was too late. And I was like, oh no, like I've missed my opportunity. But I emailed her and she was like, great, here's the book. I need your endorsement at this time frame. And I got to just get in the bed, which I had a hard time wanting to do, just getting still, which is why I stayed sick and my shingles wouldn't go away. And I got to read this book and it was, I just absorbed it. It was so good. So encouraging. The best thing for a stressed out person to do is to read You Are My Sunshine. But I think my favorite thing was that you were on a tricycle.
Oh yeah. That's right.
That did everything for me. So I need to know a little bit more about your journey with this three-wheeled bike versus Jamie's journey with just her two wheels and the difference in y'all's bike ride experiences because of that.
Well,
you did 300 something miles with that bike.
Yeah. With that little trike. It's it's a recumbent trike. So you kind of lean back. You're kind of like on a recliner is basically how it is. And you look like a fool and there's no way not to. I mean, you just look like everybody's dad.
Elderly people in my parents' neighborhood. They ride those.
That's right. It's the flagship of all old men. It's just like, and so there I was on this little thing, and the wheels were a lot smaller than Jamie's wheels. Jamie's wheels are huge. So, so one little rotation of her legs is like worth 10 of my rotations. So I'm behind her, just like pedaling like her little brother, just trying to keep up. And she is just killing it. And I'm just dying back there. And about 5 minutes into our journey, I thought, this is going to be bad. This is not cool. And when I would pass people, there were no trikes. You don't see trikes out there on the trail. At least we did not see any. I saw two in the entire time, and one, they were both in city areas. So, so you don't see them. And when I would pass people, they would kind of look at you really funny because there were bikes out there, and they'd, as we'd pass them, I could hear them saying as we rode past, God bless him, he's so brave. I thought, well, they must think there's something wrong with me, you know, and they really did. I think they thought I was like, you know. So we finished, and that's really remarkable on that track. I would not recommend anybody ride a three-wheel bike on that trail.
But you did it.
I sure did, yeah.
I feel like it would be seemingly more comfortable than what Jamie did. Just they are.
It absolutely is. It is more comfortable. But that's its only benefit. You can carry more gear. That's true, too. You can carry more gear, but it's just
not the best
thing. I love the bike. I love the track itself. I mean, it's sitting right out here, not even 15 feet away from me, and I unfold it and ride it all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
I like it, but I also hate it. So it's kind of both, you know.
Love-hate relationship. Yep. What was y'all's like favorite moment on this trip? Your moment or Jamie's or just y'all's collectively? What was your favorite moment?
That's a really good question. There were so many. I mean, once you're out there in the middle of, you know, the woods, it's, you have a million little moments. I think my favorite piece of the trip was when we were done.
Like when you hit the finish line?
Yeah, when we were over, it was over.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you meant like when we weren't doing it anymore.
No, that is really what I mean. I mean, when we were not.
Okay. Well, and I know that y'all talk about, like in the book, it's like, when you made it to the end, like that emotion, like the rush of just like, we did it. We finished this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really weird to look back, physically to turn around behind you and look at the view in what's behind you. You see these mountains, they're everywhere. And you realize, oh my gosh, we just rode over all that.
Mm-hmm. And
you really truly see the mountains. You see a lot of the territory you just covered. It's really wild.
That's really cool. Yeah, I remember finishing up on the Appalachian Trail, and we ended up having to reroute where we were going because the snow was so bad. And And it was like, we came out and I'd been praying on that trip. I was just like, Lord, I just want to experience an angel. Like, it was just this thing that I just decided in my head that I wanted to experience an angel. And we came out through the clearing and there was a road, you know, obviously that runs alongside mm-hmm. that trail. And it was super foggy and we started walking on this road and the fog cleared and there were these little old people that were sitting and they were trail angels. Oh. And like we walked up to them, we were like, hi, like we had to hitchhike. And so we were like, hey, help us. And they were like, hey, we're the trail angels. And I was like, I saw an angel, you know, oh, I was so wow. excited.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. I love that.
Yes. Isn't that awesome? And they bring food every single day and they sit on the road. It's like all these retired people.
Really?
And they give food to hikers and they help them hitchhike back to like a base. And so
I love that. Anyways,
I remember that feeling. It's so weird of like sitting down with a seat with a back on it and how mm-hmm. incredible that felt.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
we did it. Like we made it. We made it. And just the yeah. rush that it sent was just like the best. What was the most challenging moment on your bike ride?
It would be a toss up between some of the hills and the rain. When it started mm-hmm. to rain, you're miserable. You are absolutely miserable. And you can't get away from it. There's nowhere you can go to get away from it. You're in this rain gear that does not work. And it's just, yep. That's awful. Hills are pretty bad too, because you only have one choice. Mm-hmm. You have to go over it or you go yep. back home. And so there's nothing you can do there either. So mm-hmm. those are probably two of the worst moments. And there were lots of them because it rained several times and there were a lot of hills. So,
I bet. And loved in the book how y'all made it somewhere. And I think it was pouring rain and you went looking for a candy bar.
Yeah.
And Jamie had eaten all the candy bars. Have you eaten a beef stick since this trip?
No, I have not. I have not eaten a beef stick in years now since that was the pandemic. So it's been about 2 years. Don't know that I'll ever eat another one again.
Oh yeah. My husband and I went through a phase where we were paying off all of our student loan debt and we ate sweet potatoes every single day. And for 2 years I was like, I can't even smell them. Like I don't want to look at a sweet potato. Now I love them, but like
right,
I
needed sure. a
2 year clean break from sweet potatoes.
I get it. I totally yeah. get it.
Yes, I love it. Well, I have really, really, really enjoyed getting to hear about your books, more than one. You've written so many. I told my mom to read Stars. Is it Stars of Alabama?
Oh, yeah, Stars of Alabama.
Yes. She loves historical fiction. And so she truly loved that book. Oh. But I've loved getting to just see your journey and your process. And I think the most encouraging thing, and maybe you can add a little bit to this about you, is your consistency in continuing your writing, even before your writing was big, even before people knew who you were, your name, cared anything about what you had to say. You still wrote something every single day. And there's something to be said for that. I think oftentimes people go at it from the angle of, I just want to be seen instead of, I just want to write. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that process for you. Like, where did you start? And then where did you start to see traction and shift kind of happen in your career?
Well, for starters, I've finally come around to calling it a career, but I've never even called it a career because that's not how I saw it. And when mm-hmm. I started, it was something I loved to do, something I did. Mm-hmm. And I've started writing, and I started writing every day and sharing it. And somebody had said early on, I said, we really like reading your stuff every morning. I look forward to it every morning. Mm-hmm. And it was somebody I knew. And I thought this little bulb clicked off of my head. And I thought, oh my gosh, people are actually reading this. Like someone's actually reading this and actually like even looks forward to it. That's such a strange feeling. Why do you care? Don't you have better things to do? That's when it became real to me that this writing is something that you were kind of, you know, meant to do. So I did it, and I did it a little more earnestly than I was doing it for the, you know, before. I don't think I was writing any differently. I just did it with a different mindset. I realized that this is not just something you do. This is something that you were made to do. This is something that maybe you were supposed to do. And so writing just then started to take over my life. I started to look forward to that moment of my day where I'd get to write something for the next day. Mm-hmm. And then it became such a pervasive part of who I was and what mm-hmm. I did every day. My wife knew that between this, you know, whenever I started writing, that I needed this block of complete isolation is what it was. Whether she was driving and I'm in the car and I'm, you know, I'm riding in the passenger seat while she drives, or whether it's at home or whatever, or whether it's in the morning, or sometimes when you're on the road, you have to do it differently. But, that it became this practice that I couldn't really enjoy an experience until I had written about it. Even if I had the experience, I needed to get into it and dissect it a little bit in the form of writing. Mm-hmm. I needed to find I needed to just reexamine what I'd just done. And so it became more about me. It became more about not writing about me. It became more about, this is something that I do for myself. This is something I do for my own mental well-being. This is something that I do for my own health, which is really neat, because when it is that kind of motivation, it's something I could probably do forever. I can do that forever. I can't do something forever that I'm doing for other people. If I do something, if I'm working for someone else, or if I'm trying to impress somebody else, then I'm not. I will burn out very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But if it's for me and it's motivated by me and it's kind of a little gift to myself, that's something, you know. So when I write anything uplifting, it's to uplift me. Mm-hmm. It's to, if I'm trying to find a moment of beauty in somebody's story, it's because that story moves me. It's because I'm trying to find that in myself. Yeah. So that is really, I'm really fortunate. I'm really fortunate that's the path my writing is taking, because a lot of people are, deadlines and stuff kill them, and they feel like they're buried beneath a mountain of expectations. And I don't feel that because I do love it so much, and I do love what I get to do. The daily writing is something I anticipate, God willing, and the creek don't rise, that I'll do it until I can't do it anymore. Like, as far as death, I don't really like to say that, but, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how much I like it. That's how much it does for me. And, and it's gotten me through some rough times in my own life. So that is more important to me than, you know, perceived success or notoriety of any kind, which is questionable that I even have any, but that is fun. That is fun to, you know. And then there's the second part of it, is that I'm making up for lost time. You know, the way that I went through life growing up and stuff, I didn't ever think I would get this opportunity. So I think maybe it was Emily Dickinson who said, success is counted sweetest among those who know the greatest, who have had the most torture, they have the greatest need. Basically anything I do at this point that feels like it's doing pretty good for me, mm-hmm. a small amount of success feels like I'm winning. That's fine. I don't need this huge, I don't need anything big. I can already die happy. Little is good.
Yeah. And you worked the whole time. I mean, you've worked other jobs while writing a column every day.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people set it down. I think this has been like a new thing for me. It's been like, oh, well, I have to work. So Right. Like, there's no time for what I care about. When right. in reality, it was, this was just like, I have to do this. Like, I have to write. I have
well,
to.
Well, and
do
I can
this.
Also say, if it's, especially in the field of writing, you're, when you do work and you are out there around normal people and normal life and a day, a really reality is what I would call it.
Yeah.
It's good for you. It's much better for your mind and much better for what you do than just being a full-time hermit, which is what you eventually turn into if you do it professionally. And your stuff, at least in my opinion, is way better. It's got more body and it's got more richness. If you're really out there in the real world and you're not isolated on some, you know, that's why in authors that I really like to read, their best stuff is always when they're hungriest, when they're younger and they're just one of us still, instead of buying their own press and thinking that they're somebody, you know?
Yep. You know, that has been, I read it in Shauna, I never know how to say her last name, Nyquist. Her last book, I guess I haven't learned that yet. It's a conglomeration of like her blog posts, but she wrote about people being uninspired. And she was like, you are uninspired because you aren't living. Like, you're sitting and scrolling. Like, go live your life. Go live life. And you will find a story. You will find, you know, the greatest thing. And that is so true. Some of the best things that I wrote or cared about writing were the things that I had lived, like what you said, just like these moments. I think that's what made your story so sweet. Just over every single day, it was like somebody you ran into at a grocery store. It's somebody, like something you saw. I remember you wrote one when I was still living in Montgomery. You wrote one on Valiant Cross, the school of all boys. Yeah. And my uncle helped start that school.
Oh, wow.
So when I read that, I was like, he captured it. Like, he gets it. I was a tutor there. Like, it was just a special place to me.
Oh, it is.
And just a remarkable thing that's happening in that city because of the school systems in Montgomery and how just deteriorated they are. And you came in and you wrote 500 words on seeing it. And everyone around you was like, either I want to go see that school, or which it helped Valiant Cross tremendously when you wrote about it, the people that are involved were like, he gets it because you saw it and you like went and felt it and you got to see that. And so
that was amazing.
Do what?
That one sticks with me. That was an amazing experience going to see them.
Oh man. One of the most remarkable things, I worked for a nonprofit. This is a side note, but I worked for a nonprofit that was in the heart of the neighborhood where all of those boys live. And I worked with the kids that went to the public school, and these boys would come in sometimes to our after school program, and they didn't have to have on their uniforms to be set apart. They could be in jeans and a t-shirt and walk in, and everyone knew which kids went to Valiant Cross and which kids did not. And that was how, and those kids are growing up in the same environment, but they are separated by the environment they're spending their entire day in. And I just remember thinking, man, they really like it's, that's how big of a difference it's making in these kids' lives. And so anyways, Sean, I so appreciate just like all of your, sweet and encouragement and just information to share about all of the things that you have done and have obviously done with your book. No one can see me holding this up, but I'm holding up the book right now.
On TV.
Yes, it's so good. But I always like to wrap up my interviews with one final question. And this can be, I mean, literally anything that you want it to be. But in this season of life right now, what is giving you hope?
What is giving me hope? Well, you know, you hear old people say, you know, that every day above ground's a good day and all that. That sounds so cliche and so trite. And it really is, because it, you know, a lot of people say it and they don't mean it, but this past year, I've lost a lot of friends. I've lost friends to cancer, and I've just lost a lot of people. And it's been a pretty rough year as far as that goes. Socialization, you know, people that you love. But it really has changed me. It really has changed me because it has just given me a new perspective, especially since I kind of went through a health scare this past year myself. And it was kind of, you know, we thought it was serious and it's not, thank God, but it has altered the way that I perceive every morning that you wake up. And not in a bad way. It's not like I feel this counting clock going downward or anything. It's really made me grateful for the little things that I have taken for granted for a long time. Now I'm sure I'll get jaded again and start taking everything for granted once again. But right now, what's given me just hope is that, you know, I woke up this morning. I woke up and I feel okay. And I'm able to do some of the things I love. When I'm finished here, I'm gonna go for a walk. I've been writing all morning, and that gives me hope, you know, that life is all right now. And that's
I love it. That's so encouraging. And I know a lot of people can relate to that. And so thank you for your encouragement. Thank you for your stories. Thank you for your work and all of the things that you do just to encourage the people that are following and paying attention to everything that you're doing. So Sean, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure. This is our second time, right?
Or woo-hoo, third? Yes, it is.
Third, yeah. All right.
I'm just going to keep on calling you back, make you come every year.
That's good. I think we should.
Yes, I think so too. Well, Sean, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Y'all, I have to take a little break and tell you about a book that absolutely changed my life. It's called Will the Circle Be Unbroken by Sean Dietrich. This book released at the start of the pandemic, and I feel like there are thousands of people that missed an opportunity to grab it. If you want a book that will make you cry aloud and then laugh out loud, look no further. The book's subtitle is The Memoir of Learning You're Going to Be Okay. Let me tell you, you will walk away inspired and believing you can truly do anything. Sean's writing is unmatched. Be sure to hop down to the show notes and click the link to grab your copy today. Thank you for listening to today's episode. It is my honor to have you here in this space, listening and being encouraged right alongside me. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share it with a friend. Each little ounce of encouragement and sharing does more than you know. If you want to follow along on social media, you can find me on Instagram at @Laura_Jean_Bell. You can join my Facebook community group, Laura Bell Writes. That is WRITES, Laura Bell Writes. Or you can hop over to my website, laurabell.co. This year is the year I am writing and finishing my first ever published book, You Can Always Come Home. I hope you will join me on social media to be a part of that journey as well. Thank you for being here, friends. Let's keep laughing at the days to come.